like a beer? You don't drink
Nah, I don't really drink that much. It doesn't do much for me. And sometimes I think I have a gluten something.
Right.
I've been unable to narrow it down for years, but occasionally if I eat the wrong thing, I just get a nasty rash on my asshole, and like a lot of times it comes from like drinking a random beer or like it's just so random.
Yeah.
Like for a long time I thought it was like pickles, and so I was like avoiding pickles, and then I was like, no, it can't be. And I was like, no tomato, anything acidic. I was just like, and now I'm just like, I pretty much eat whatever I want. And then like every 6 months somehow something happens randomly, and I'm like, what the fuck did I eat?
That's interesting. I wonder if it's even like a dietary thing.
I don't know. Yeah, it could just be. But I had like, I went to, you know, the doctor, and they're just like, we don't know. And I got, they tested
Your
my shit,
Mark
and they tested all this stuff, yeah.
Your doctor's Mark Norman.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, comedy. But yeah. After a while, you're just like, I'm tired of going to doctors.
I know.
I just found out I have a torn hip labrum too, so now they're like, well, you would need surgery, or if it's not that bad, you can just tough it out for a couple of years. And I'm like, great.
You know,
it'll be like a 6 month rehab and not be able to walk really well. Like, that sounds awesome.
There's a line. We are recording.
Now, all right. Did we get the stuff about my poop in there?
Yeah, I think
okay,
so.
Good.
I think we got it.
Good.
There's a Louis line that I think about. It's like a perfect Louis line. Where he goes, you're not an athlete.
Yeah, I love that. I think about that joke every time I go to the doctor, where they're like, yeah, you and your shitty ankle forever. And you're like, but like, what?
Until you fucking die.
No, no.
Yeah,
you're not. I'm going to
make sure that I'm
in frame.
In frame.
In frame in the membrane.
My crotch nice and central to the. Yeah, there's a. He also, by the way, like the best ever baby shit jokes. I guess I can just turn it this way so I can actually see.
Wiping it out of a tiny vagina. Yeah, who thought that would be my relationship?
Yeah. What a great. I've like rewritten that joke so many times as a dad. oh, fuck. It's all crooked. God damn it. This is good podcasting.
We got to cut out all the stuff about Louis C.K., you know. My favorite comedian.
He is the best ever, in my opinion.
Yeah. Hard to argue.
Okay. So, I want to start with this.
Okay.
My introduction to Andrew Rivers is one lonely night. I'm probably, like, I'm in an age between your rise, like I found out about you between your rise and when your dad stopped doing radio in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So
you learned of, you knew my dad?
I took radio broadcasting classes at KGRG.
Yeah.
And I went to one of the like things for like a class was go to the Bob Rivers studio.
Oh, cool.
And coincidentally, when we went in there, it was Jeff Dye.
Oh, funny.
Was in studio. And he was like talking about how he knew you, and he made a joke how they were going to call the Oklahoma City Thunder the Oklahoma City Bombers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're in Oklahoma City right
now,
by the way. But also, I did a joke about the Oklahoma City bombing last time. Can I tell you, they don't love that here? They're not big fans of jokes about that. Still very sensitive.
Maybe your joke just sucks.
It's possible.
But I have two 9/11 jokes. One of them does really well. One of them doesn't. But I'm like, the one that eats shit is my favorite.
Right.
And I can't figure out how to get them to just laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're getting there.
Yeah. I did go. I went to the museum last time.
The Oklahoma City Museum?
The bombing museum.
I didn't know
museum.
There was a museum for the bombing.
It's like three stories. It's actually the building, like the... some of the old building is like still on the ground. So it's like very intense.
I drove by one time and there's like a chain link fence and people had like hearts and like tied stuff on there.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's probably there's like I mean it damaged multiple buildings.
Right.
The building that it like the main the main hit is like has been demolished for safety.
Right.
And you can like it's like very intense. And I went there and I was like, well, I have this idea for a joke for tonight. Maybe I'll get more material out of this. And I did not. Like, I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing jokes about this. And I did them anyway. And they, like, one bombed pretty hard. Yeah. And one was like, a little one, like, okay, but it was like, I feel like New Yorkers are better. Like, 9/11 was more recent, but New Yorkers are better with 9/11 jokes than Oklahoma City folks are with Oklahoma City bombing jokes.
You know what's funny, though? I mean, this is the advice Titus gave me, like, 13 years ago that was, like, is still something I am struggling with, but it's like, don't be afraid to not be funny.
Sure.
And it, and it's like, sometimes you just, you hold yourself back because you're like, ah, I don't think this is going to be that good.
Right.
And now you know that your jokes suck, you know? So.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not afraid of bombing. I think that, like.
Well, yeah, you do it all the time, but.
Boy, I really started my set off rough today, by the way.
You got to get there, get them on your side before you make fun of the bolo tie.
I know.
From the headliner. I did it at the end of my set. Bolo tie. And he was
like. He came and talked to you.
Yeah, he bought a shirt.
Yeah, that was. I might have lost.
And then his like cousin or something, he was like, I'm a liberal, but he's a Trumper. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, that's because
I was looking at him the whole time during some of those jokes, kind of being like,
yeah,
that was, you don't like, wear that costume and vote liberal, I think.
But. There was a family, what seemed like a family in the front row of, it was like, there were like three black people and one white lady. And I couldn't tell if the white lady was like a young person who dyes her hair gray or was their mom. Because at first I was like, oh, she's their white
adopted,
mom.
Adopted, yeah.
Or no, like maybe the black dad. Yeah. I don't know what we're supposed to call that at this point, but
black dad.
Yeah, but I think like and then as they got like closer, I'm like, well, she's like kind of younger than I thought she was, and so but they were like,
how long you guys been together? Oh, that's your kid.
Right. Every time I did a racial joke, I was like, ooh, this is Anyway, though, so your dad, I found out about you because of your dad, and I'm like, you know, my. Your dad was like towards the end of his Seattle radio career.
Yeah.
But he was like, I mean, he was doing music. He was on a music station that I hadn't known about ever in my life. It was like KZOK, I think, at that point, right?
Oh, so end was KJR, I think. Yeah. But yeah. KZOK and then KJR. KISW, KZOK for 10 years. KJR.
And KJR when it was like. Oldies, maybe?
Yeah, it was like the Jet. It turned into like the Jet. They did a rebrand or whatever. I don't know what they are now, but yeah, just classic rock kind of stuff.
So I think it's at a point now.
But he didn't do music. He just did talk radio. So
yeah, he was like, like that's what they used to do too, is like morning shows used to be like everyone was kind of trying to be Howard Stern.
Right.
Not him necessarily, but like to some degree, I'm sure there was. Like, remember we had the T-Man? You remember the T-Man?
I remember I used to ride the school bus, and they'd play, like, the T-Man, and I'd be like, can we switch to KZOK? And then I'd always sit up front, and then all the kids in the back would be like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, I just thought it was interesting. I always like, listened to it, because I thought,
that's
like,
so interesting.
It's a good show to me. It was always a funny show.
Yeah. Well, because the other thing about your dad is, like, it's funny the, like, brevity of fame, because your dad is like, so he was a huge local
radio
guy,
yeah
Bob Rivers, and actually had like national exposure because he would do those and
Twisted
maybe
Tunes,
the Twisted Tunes, but maybe he was syndicated, I don't know, but
here's a fun story, is he was reading the tea leaves, you know, for his, when he was negotiating his last contract. And he said, I have to be syndicated.
Right.
That's a stipulation I'm putting in my contract. And you have to leave me on the air for like 2 months. Just give me a shot.
Right.
And then if it sucks after 2 months, you pull it, whatever. But like, just give me a chance to catch on. And then they put him on in a couple places. And after like, what, you know, maybe a month, whatever it was. They just go, yeah, we're not doing that. And he was like, it's in my contract. You're breaking the contract. And they were like, yeah, sue us. And he's like, God. I don't need the money. I need a career. Like, I'm trying to keep my career to the next level and make you guys a bunch of money, but you're fucking idiots.
Well, but he was like, the thing about him, and again, it's like I know about him, despite the fact that he was on a radio station I never listened to, and I knew about him before that. I knew the name Bob Rivers. Bob Rivers, is he, I mean, maybe like in the Mount Rushmore of Seattle radio, he's probably one of the guys. Like, what? So. Who's the guy? Like Pat O'Day, maybe.
Yeah, and one of the Cashmans. I mean, BJ Shea's still doing it, but I don't know what his popularity is.
It's funny though, because like even BJ Shea was a guy that I was like very into radio, and BJ Shea was a guy that got like he was like a post Howard Stern guy,
right.
Like when Howard Stern went to satellite radio, BJ Shea. There was BJ Shea. Remember when you and I are roughly the same age. Remember Andy Savage on end?
Yeah.
I was like, that dude is going to be... I met Steve, the producer, who's Steve Miggs, who's, I think, on BJ's show.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a fucking celebrity. I knew, like, the band that he played in. He had a band called Peter Parker. I was like a big...
Wow.
These fucking radio, like, icons in the city. And now it's crazy because it's like, who's even BJ Shea? And then Jubal and Jubal's.
But is Jubal still on even? I don't even know.
I looked it up recently. But like, there's like, it's radio so different.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. I haven't seen him.
I don't talk to him very often, but.
I worked with him when he had that. Did you ever know about his, like, he ran over a snowman and people got mad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I worked with him around then, and I don't think he ever was on the air at his old station after that. But I don't know if that was the catalyst to him leaving, but it was like, we were talking about a lot of stuff, and I was like, oh, this is like, it's just a brutal business.
Yeah.
It's a brutal business.
Yeah.
It's even like a lot of comics do local radio.
Yeah. I mean, like Brian Moot, I don't know if you remember him at all. Like, he moved to Atlanta or something.
Is
now
he
he's
in
like
LA
Dallas,
now?
I think.
Maybe. He was a great comic, too.
Really good comic.
Yeah.
I like but it's hard to make to a fucking good. Living. I mean, obviously.
Well, it's hard to make a living at either.
Right.
And actually the
but if you get on the radio, there's a chance that you can start selling tickets.
Right.
And then
it's the rare thing where they're greater than the sum of their parts,
right,
potentially.
Right.
Because, and that's, I mean, I guess that's like podcasting. There's
right,
an appetite
right.
for it for sure. But so you're, but yeah, like what I'm kind of curious about, because I've heard stories about you. I'll tell you the stories that I've heard about you, and then you can confirm and
sure.
add color to
all
them
right.
if you'd like. So. Basically, you started comedy and sucked like everyone sucks when they start.
Yeah.
And decided...
I'm going to challenge that. I was a genius and I was a protege.
Nobody appreciated
protege.
You properly.
Yeah.
Prodigy.
Prodigy.
Yeah.
I just need you to correct all my words. Personal antidotes.
Yeah, antidotes. Anyway, you... basically got in your car and slept in your car and drove across the country doing comedy.
Yeah, that was real romanticized for me coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had that book and my dad would interview comics and they'd have like Jay Leno on and they'd be like,
right.
yeah, I mean, we just slept in our car in LA and we whatever and you just figured it out. And I was like, oh, so this isn't that crazy.
It's funny because even like I'm trying to imagine telling a 22-year-old this guy was so big, he had Jay Leno on his radio show.
Yeah.
And those are two people that they're like, what, like the guy with that car series
and
a guy with a podcast with his son? Like, it's just so the like brevity of fame is.
And now his podcast hits like 1,000 downloads and he's like, ah, cool.
Right.
And like, he's not trying that hard, you know, which is I kind of lecture him sometimes where I'm like, you have a fan page that on Facebook that has like 200,000 likes that you do nothing with and like whatever. But also, you know, he did well while he could and got out at the right time and saved his money and, you know. But yeah, so there was a lot of like, I moved into like Craigslist houses to do comedy and I would rent a room for like $400 and then I would just... you know, drive around for a month or two. And then after a while, I convinced the landlord to be like, can I just pay half if I'm not here for the entire month or something
right.
like that? And he was like, he's like, if you're not here for the entire month, just give me $100. And I was like, deal, you know, because
wow.
I kept moving stuff into storage and moving it out and moving back in every 3 months. Jubal let me live with him for a while, which saved my life because I had finally got, I was making pretty good money, you know.
Right.
And Tacoma was just opening and becoming like a really good spot. And they just moved into the newer building, you know. And then, so I moved into this really nice house in Tacoma. Still like Craigslist-y, but I was paying like $750 a month. And it was like a big house, a big room.
What year was that?
I'll have to go back and find out, but I was there for like a couple months, and then one day I came home and like the power was shut off, and there's like a note on the door, and I knew the guy was, there was something off, but I didn't trust my own instincts, you know? And so, like, he had weird people over, and then he moved himself into the basement so he could rent out more rooms.
Interesting.
And then, you know, he started getting kind of scabby, you know, and I was like, I don't know if this is a good... But I'm also like, I'm never here. I don't care what you do. Do drugs. Right. Have a blast.
Yeah, and I imagine back then, I mean, even now, like, you're, like, what, do you have a camera and a laptop? You're probably taking that with you on the road
exactly.
anyway.
Exactly.
You know?
So, But yeah, it was like a really nice place, and then the power was shut off, and they're like, oh, nobody paid the bill. And I'm like, oh, fuck, what am I paying this guy for? And so then, like, I called my dad or something, and he was just like, get out. Like, please just, I'll be there in the morning. My dad is never that helpful, you know, but right. he was, like, so passionate. There's, like, two times in my life my dad has yelled and cursed at me, and this is one of them. And he was like, get the fuck out of that house. I don't want you staying there. I'll be there in the morning with a pickup truck. We'll move you out. We'll figure something out.
Damn.
And then, you know, like 2 months before that, Jubal, I worked with him, and he was like, you know, I was telling him, like, oh, move into all these random places and whatever. And he was like, dude, I got a spare room if you ever need it. And I was like, nice. Oh, you're crazy. And then I was like, oh, my God, can I move in tonight? And he was like, yeah, man, just here's the door code. I won't be home, but have a blast. And so, like, I had to like, go to the bank. I had to chase him down for my deposit back and all this stuff. And then I, like, went to the bank, and they were like, does he owe you money? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you know, they can't say anything because they're like, whatever it is, the
doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah, doctor-patient confidentiality. But they were like, all I can tell you is we can't cash this now, but check back every once in a while, maybe in a few days. I'm like, does he have money? Does he have a check about to come in? They're like, just come in every couple days. And so, like, finally I went in one day, and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll cash it. And but they were like, I'm so sorry that you got fucked by this guy.
Damn, that sucks.
And they just, you know, they knew that he was just bad news or whatever. But yeah, and then that's when my parents bought me a house, which changed everything for
gotcha.
Me. Because then I didn't – now I'm actually comfortable. I have a space I like. I'm not moving out. I can get, you know – and I would, you know, you owe property taxes and all this stuff, but the monthly dues were like, at the time, it was like $475. And so.
Did you like HOA fee?
Yeah. Gotcha. So then I just got a roommate, and then I basically had free house. And that makes me, you know, when you have that lower nut every month, it's like, oh, I can experiment more. I can fly to gigs. I can do whatever.
It's easier to lose money and
survive.
Yeah,
exactly.
I was going to say that I think that a thing I admire about you is that you have not traded on your dad's fame.
Well,
in the time when I have known you.
Well, this is what's interesting, too, is there's not, you can't really do anything with it. He's not on the radio for the past 10 years.
Right. I will say the using the money your dad made from his fame to get a house is pretty good. That's pretty good.
Well, what's funny is maybe I'll do this joke on stage one day, but he saved a bunch of money to pay for my wedding and a honeymoon and a down payment on the first house. And so when my brother got married, they gave him a bunch of money. Like, I think it was $150,000. And they're this will pay for the wedding and a honeymoon and a down payment on a house. And then after a while, they were like, that's not going to happen for you. So just use this to buy a house. And I was, you know, getting murdered probably in all these weird houses.
Well, the other thing about that that I think is admirable is I think you probably could have ridden the legacy. Because how long ago did you start comedy?
13 years, 14 years coming up.
So you could have probably ridden the legacy into you know, like low, and maybe you did at the beginning, by the way.
Well,
I
went on his show every once in a while. We used to have a segment called like Nepotism at 9.
That's great.
And, you know, we leaned into it very heavily like, we're being dumb. And also I was bad at the beginning. So like, I would come on there and be like, I'm hosting the open mic of laughs. And they'd be like,
great, you know, like, are people going to come out? And so, like, I would give shout outs to the clubs and stuff like that. And I'm sure, Dave didn't mind that I was, you know, but I never tried to be like, do you know who my dad is or anything? Right. I was very aware of, I hope I'm self-aware, right, enough to be like, and when I started, people would give me shit anyway.
Well, that's what I think that there's probably a good chance that people started you at a disadvantage.
Yeah. Because people just thought like I was getting booked because of my dad. And like, right, he got me maybe like, there was like a radio
just
contest.
Just 75 or 100 gigs, that's all.
But it was like I was doing triple runs, right, through like Montana and like, yeah, Pocatello, Oregon or whatever.
And that's the thing is like,
Idaho, yeah.
Bob Rivers doesn't matter in Pocatello,
no,
Idaho.
No, he barely mattered. You know, if I had been like great at comedy, it could have helped. But
sure,
I was brand new, you know. I was probably like a 4 or 5 year comic by the time, right, he quit. And so I'm getting like, you know, I promoted an album recording at Tacoma way too early, that hopefully that album never sees the light of day. But me and Adam,
I've seen the, yeah, I've the seen artwork the poster, there. Yeah. Did it never,
but yeah, we would
it came
try
out,
to
right?
get things. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, I'm sure it's somewhere. I was sold them and it was awful quality. And but like, you know, I did try to promote things once I got to a level where promotion was, but I don't know if it ever made any difference. You
can
know?
I ask you, he told me a story, Adam told me a story, because he started comedy at, I think, a similar point, mm-hmm, to you, probably maybe a little earlier.
I think earlier, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was doing improv from a young age. He was
right,
performing a lot.
So he told me that you guys used to do each other's, like, you had 25 minutes, he had 25
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you guys would just do each other's yeah, material to fill 50?
Yeah.
So that you could headline?
Yeah, we would go, this tonight I'm doing a one-man show called Some of My Friends' Jokes. Because you get booked for, like, Pocatello. And even if you have 50, that's not 50 in,
right,
in Winnemucca, Nevada. My career's on fire, you know, whatever.
My favorite thing about those kinds of things is, like, I don't know Winnemucca.
Yeah.
But I guarantee
but you
there's a gig,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying,
Abe used to shout it out all the time is, that was one of his, you know, I was just in Winnemucca or whatever. But yeah, like, he got booked for this college thing, like, where he was, I forget even, it was called, like, it was like a make me laugh kind of a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to perform for these shitty college kids that were getting prizes if they didn't laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, you know, when we talk about, like, people in the front row body language, like, crossing, yeah, their arms, you got to win those people over. But now you're adding incentive to this shitty kid
for them
to not
laugh.
So yeah, he's just bombing with all of his material, and then he's bombing with all of my material, and he's bombing with all of his friends. You know, he's just doing Chad Daniels jokes and trying to get anything, because it doesn't matter. No one's going to recognize anything.
So since I started comedy, I've said this thing, which is, like, I've always been involved with, I know people who are good at comedy, we're like at a similar level and we're friends and we like help each other out in ways, but I've always said that I don't think the comedy is a team sport, and I think that specific moment is where it actually
yeah,
is a team
that's
sport.
That's the
like,
only time.
Just go do my fucking
yeah,
joke.
Yeah,
like, that's fine.
I mean, I do one of his bits now, actually.
I know.
And I think he's not thrilled with it,
yeah,
but I think he also likes that it lives on, this is what I keep trying to tell him. I'm like, no, you don't have this joke recorded anywhere, and you quit comedy, so let me win a Grammy and get famous, and then try to...
It's a very
to...
good joke. It's a joke that...
And it fits so perfectly with the joke that it goes... Because otherwise, it's just kind of a one-liner about a mm-hmm, suicide joke or whatever, and I think like that sets it up with like a less harsh,
right,
maybe. And it's a fucking good joke.
It's a great
it's
joke.
It's so good.
It's a great joke.
So... It deserves to be told.
Yeah,
and so,
I think that's true. I do think it deserves to be told, and
so,
I think that you're probably a dirty, rotten scoundrel for taking it the way you did.
I mean,
but, whatever.
He still booked me, so
that's true.
He's
that
not
true.
That upset. But you were on the boat with us, and he goes, "I go, if I win a Grammy, I'll shout you out." And he was like, "Okay, I'm okay." You know, so like, so there is a, you know, there is a little bit of a understanding, but.
Okay,
you know.
So another thing I want to know about is, because your dad started radio in like what, the 90s or 80s maybe?
Well, in Seattle, 87 or something like that. Or so, maybe, so maybe he was in 88. Seattle
from 87 to like
2012? He was number one in Seattle for like, he was in Seattle 25 years, I think.
So like having a 25-year comedy career is insane. Having a 25-year radio career in one city is
impossible.
Right. And especially, three stations. Especially yeah. a city. So when I was taking radio classes, they would say Seattle's like a destination city. That's where people want to, that's like the goal is to get to a market as big as Seattle in a city.
I think it's like a top 9, top 10 kind of market.
Something like that. But also it's like pleasant to live in. Right. You know, like Chicago is a good place, but if you don't like cold or super hot.
Right. So he was doing radio in like Baltimore, and he moved around a couple times out there when we were younger, and he got famous in Baltimore for I think it's 1988, the Baltimore Orioles started the season 0-for-22 or something like that. And so halfway through the season, he goes, I'm not going to get off the air until the Orioles win a game, thinking, like, that'd be a couple days. And they went on to lose, like, 15 more games. And so he stayed on the air for, like, 20 days in a row.
Wow.
And so he would, like, sleep for an hour in the back while they played records. And so, and he also, now I learned he did a lot of cocaine, but here's a fun story too. Is one time I was at his station promoting my gigs that no one was going to come to. Here's one thing I got is like I happened to be there one day while this guy was like promoting a brand new Hooters casino opening, and so he was like, "You're a comedian?" I'm like, "Yeah," and he's like, "We should maybe have a comedy show," and I'm like, "I'm your guy," and so then like that is how I got them to pay me $400 a week for like 3 months until it turns out like the whole operation was shady and like they went bankrupt in like 6 months.
It's
but, like,
crazy for a casino to go out of business.
I know. And a Hooters casino.
Yeah.
You got tits, beer, wings, and poker.
Gambling, yeah.
And you can't make that work. But it was in White Center, so it's not a great area, you know? But anyway, we were trying to re-up the ad. The guy was buying ads on my dad's radio station for the comedy night, and we were all in my dad's office, you know, office size, and they're trying to call the guy to get a hold of him, and they can't, like, this is a scheduled phone call. And so I'm just kind of in the back, everyone's doing their thing. I'm behind my dad, and I think he forgets I'm there. And so they finally get a hold of the guy, and he's like, there's all this background noise, and he's like, I'll call you back in 3 minutes. I'm so sorry, I forgot. I'll call you in 3 minutes. And they hang up, and my dad goes, that guy reminds me of me when I did coke. And then no one laughed because they're all facing me, but he's facing away. And then he turns around, and he's like, well, you had to learn someday, you know? And then we had like a sit-down
conversation. How old were you then?
This is a couple years into comedy, so I was like 27 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
It's not terrible, but like, you know, my hero. And then we like had a conversation later where he was like, it was cheap back in the day, and it was a treat. It was like everyone did it, and it was a different, it's not as strong as the stuff now.
Well, it's also, I mean, especially today, it's full of fentanyl, but it's been...
Oh, yeah. I would never go near... I've never done it also, but I... Especially now. I mean, we hear stories about comics that fucking died.
Yeah, and like so, 4 or 3 out of 4 in one night or something
in a
like
big
that,
party, yeah. And so I just don't... If I can't buy it from the weed store even, like people after shows will be like, come smoke with me, and I'm like, number one, I don't know what, you know, infused or whatever shit you do, it's part hash or who knows, and also I just don't want to make out with you via a joint, you know.
Yeah.
And so but yeah, we you know, that's what's great is our relationship was strong enough for him to be like, let me tell you about rehab, you know. And then I had a whole joke about it,
he like went to rehab.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't realize the extent of it at the time, but like, I knew growing up, like, he's been sober 30 years or something like that, over 30 years
and
now.
Like, he's sober?
Yeah. So, he'll, like, have non-alcoholic beers once in a while.
Sure. But no weed.
No. And he, well, now, the cancer's kind of changed everything a little bit, but he did do weed for a little bit because he started having like headaches and some stuff. So he was like, and I think that might be cancer related, but
sure.
But it was before he found out that he had cancer. So it's kind of a gray area in there. But yeah, so he was like, you know, so I just knew growing up, like even when I got caught drinking the first time, when I was in Boy Scouts, I was like 16 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole punishment was like, you have to tell your parents yourself. And I was like, that's worse. Can't you just tell them? And then I don't have to say anything. And then they're mad already. And so I like get home from the camp meeting and then they're just in bed. And I'm like, we stole the group leader's ID and used it to buy beer. Because there was a guy who was like 16 going on 45, you know,
mm-hmm.
one of those animals that hit puberty at 12. And
I know, so I had a buddy that used to buy me porn at 14.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, maybe even 12.
I used to steal credit card numbers from the place because they would be like, free trial. You just got to cancel it within a month. And I'd be, but you have to enter the card.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just take someone's random card, like, you know, write it down. And then I'm like, I hope I remember to cancel that, you know, but like, whatever. But
my,
my
buddy had, we played baseball. He was actually like my best friend in high school, and he had a beard. We played like summer ball.
Yeah.
And he would show up to games and they'd be like, hey, coach. Because he had like I grow an all right beard.
Yeah.
He grew like a fucking wire brush at like 14, right? And yeah, he could get alcohol at 14,
wow.
tobacco at 14. And porn at 14. At the time, I was only interested
yeah.
in the porn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And God, I had so many.
If you'd only known.
I know. I had so many Vivid DVDs. And
oh,
fuck.
Hell
remember
yeah.
Vivid?
Yeah.
Oh.
So anyway, I told my parents, like, yeah, we bought some beer. And they were just like, my dad literally just goes, well, be careful.
Right.
You know, it's pretty dangerous. And it's not, you know, can lead to some bad stuff. It's why I don't drink, but. You know, I understand you're going to experiment, so just...
Yeah,
and I was like, well, that's kind of no fun even. And so then I just never really drank that much.
That's so funny. Yeah, I wonder, like, because I feel like as a sober person, you might be even more, like, prohibitive of your kids. But maybe, I mean, I guess that's, like, a pretty healthy...
Well, I think he... I mean, you know, Kermit talks about this maybe a little bit, but, like, it either goes... It's extreme. You either go, I'm going to be just like my dad, or I'm going to I'm going to be the fucking guy he never was or could
yeah.
be, you know.
Well, that's why, like, I mean, it's going to be interesting to me how these kids turn out, like the next generation of kids, because
everyone's on shit.
Well, yeah. But also, like, you think about it, like, my dad is a conservative. I'm pretty liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of that type of rebelling, like
mm-hmm.
polar
yeah.
political. And it's like,
I know people, though, that, like, I mean, at least girls I know are like, my parents told me if I vote liberal that they'll cut me off or they'll
that's what I'm saying.
Kick me out of the house or whatever.
And then they still do it.
Right. Well, I don't know. The girls I talk to are, I like dated a girl and then
gotcha.
I, like, we were talking about it and I was like, I was starting to show her the light a little bit, at least I like to think, where she would like at least have conversations with me.
Mm-hmm.
But then... After we broke up, she's married to a guy in Texas that's in the military right now. And I'm like, yeah, you know.
Gotcha.
Your parents probably approve of that much more than the scrawny comedian.
Yeah, pothead.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't. Yeah. This was the beginning of my pot journey, but she really got me into lots of problems.
Did she ever come to the comedy club, the Tacoma Comedy Club?
No.
There was a girl that I was certain you had dated, but you were being coy about it.
I tried to not let anyone know because I also like.
Blonde lady. Lived in Tacoma for sure.
No. Well, if she lived in Tacoma, then that wasn't it. The girl I dated lived in Spokane.
Gotcha.
But we only dated for a couple months.
Her name was Rachel Dolezal.
She would fly. I'd fly her out once in a while and like, you know. But after a while, it just.
But so what I'm saying is, though, is like I.
The rebellion, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's going to be. Like, the new punk rock is being conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the new rebellion is
yeah.
being conservative.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
And it's not just, like...
Oh, my liberal parents.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's like... But it's not the same as, like, my dad is, like, pro-life. And, you know, like, whatever. He's, like, he would never admit to this, but actually I think it's a compliment compared to what I think people would think of him, is he's a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
He hates the idea that he's a libertarian, but he is a libertarian. And But I think, like, it's like conservatives are becoming way more liberal.
I also hate the labeling. I think we're now, again, we're in this era of where it's like, I do think there are some conservative things that are a good idea. And then, you know, whatever.
I said this to my wife the other day because I was complaining about, because I will almost never complain about, we, like, you and I in our lives probably rarely deal with, in our, like, home city, true conservatives, mm-hmm. right? Like, we'll deal with people who are like, I have a conservative view on this, or my most important issue is this, but they're like, you know, pro-gay marriage, pro-whatever.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my wife about how I, like, really appreciate that she just doesn't give a shit about politics, because I can just say whatever I want to say. I know she's not going to get mad at me. We might talk about it, and she might disagree. Like, we've had, like, especially, like, all the Roe versus Wade stuff going on.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of, like, good conversations, if you listen to this, baby. But I, all the women I dated before her, I don't think that I know who any of them would have voted for.
Interesting.
My presumption is they're probably liberal, but that's only because I'm from here.
Yeah,
I'm
from Seattle area. I think also, like, if you dated someone pre-Trump even, politics wasn't even a big deal.
I know, that's the thing. It's like everybody pretends like we've always known each other's politics.
No.
I don't give a fuck.
No.
You have a joke about dating a Trump
supporter. Yeah.
And I don't know how true that is.
I mean,
is.
It's kind of about that.
The other lady.
That chick, yeah.
But, like, I'm like... Do you ever meet a black person that loves Donald Trump? It's invigorating. You never have?
No, I don't think so.
There are. It's, dude, it's like, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
I would rather talk to that person a million times over
than
some fucking green haired white dude with fucking.
I don't want to talk to either of them.
I do. Well, you're racist.
But, I know. I don't like green hair, can I say? Here's a good street joke. Speaking of green hair, there's a lady at a checkout stand with beautiful blonde hair, and the cashier's like, I love your hair. How did you get that color? And she's like, oh, it's natural. You gotta do the act out. It's natural. Oh, okay. Next lady comes through, beautiful red hair. Oh, I love your hair. How did you do that? Oh, it's natural. And the lady with green hair comes through, and she's like, interesting hair. How did you get that? She's like, it's natural.
That's quite a street joke. What was it like growing up? Like, because, I mean, again, it's like, so my dad was a contractor, carpenter, like our Boy Scout leader. He was like a baseball coach at times. He was, like, known in the community, but he wasn't, like...
Yeah.
He wasn't known.
I had, like, teachers...
Right.
...that would, like, stop me in the hallway and be like, I heard your dad this morning.
Yeah,
and
like...
I'd be like, okay.
So I went to Fife School District, and there's a weird cult thing in Fife where there's some people who, like, they're, like, third or fourth generation Fife families, right? I am not one of those. I will never be one of those. But I would be in class, and it would be like... A teacher is like, yeah, I had your mom. To like a kid my age, like, yeah, I had your mom in whatever, 1983.
Oh,
it's like so cool.
Yeah,
and I would always be like kind of envious.
Yeah.
But you'd have that with like, I listen to your dad.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like a good chunk of your teachers were probably listening to your dad. I think by the way, it is adorable that you asked the bus driver to change the station.
I think that's the funniest story too. Yeah. And I don't know that. I mean, the kids hated me, but like, I don't think
for many reasons.
Yeah,
and
I don't think
also.
They knew that, you know, whatever. But I definitely remember them complaining once in a while. But most of the time, they were just telling fart jokes or whatever. I think, and then I started sitting up front because
it's also funny that you're like, because your dad was like not like completely clean, but like T-Man, was like, Tom Likas,
right?
Basically,
yeah. So I grew up like in the car. I would listen to like, you know, radio people, Dr. Laura, and like, you know, so like Rush Limbaugh. Even like,
sure.
We just had that on, kind of, because that was kind of my dad's like, that was like checking out the competition and seeing what people are talking about and how styles differ and, but so like, yeah, I don't know. But he always, I liked his style of, like, even if he wasn't my dad, but maybe not. maybe I liked it because it was my dad, but like I enjoyed his show much more. It was more mature. And I was always fighting to be like my whole, I mean, from like 14 to like 34 was like, I'm an adult. I can take care of myself. Like,
right.
I just wanted to be like, when I was like 18, my parents bought me a cell phone and then they paid for the bill for 6 months. And then one day the bill started coming to my place and I just started paying it because I was like, no, I pay for my own fucking phone bill, you know? And I've always been trying to prove my own maturity, you know? I wanted people to take me seriously.
Yeah, well, and that's like, it's interesting because I'm sure there are people who think that you got a lot more from being his son than you did.
I mean, like, a sense of humor, an idea of how, you know, jokes work, an idea of...
Also probably, like, you know, frankly, like, the inclination to go for it.
Yeah. That is, he's the guy who told me to do it, even.
Right.
As I was at a wedding for my brother, I was like working at this marketing job and I had just gotten a promotion to salary and benefits. And I was like, I needed a bunch of dental surgery, still do. Spoiler alert. But I was like, oh, I'll wait a couple months to like rack up a bunch of bills.
Yeah.
And then like 3 months after I got the promotion, they laid me off in 2008, 2009, when the economy went to shit. And so like, but like a month before that, I was at a wedding for my brother and I gave a speech and my dad had comedians on all the time and he would watch Jay Leno. And so I picked up that stuff where I had a rule of three and a callback in my wedding speech my brother. I didn't really know that. I didn't know what they were called, but I just kind of had the instinct of like, oh, you do a thing and then you call back to the first one or whatever. And so it was all about like, you know, when my brother, I asked him for a ride home and he made me walk the mile down the dirt road, but it's my fault. I asked for the ride and he had better things to do and whatever. And I just want to be on the record that I do not approve of this marriage. So when it goes wrong, you can't blame me. You know, that's kind of like the gist of it.
Sure.
And so like all these people came up to me after the speech. And the guy who was like, you know, he was like, how do I follow that? Like there was a second speech after me and I was like, I blacked out. Like I had no idea. I'm so mad. There's no video of this whole thing. Yeah. Cause I'm like, how did it really go? Cause everyone came up to me and they were like, that was so fun. You're so funny. You should be a comedian. You should do comedy. And I was like, whatever. But I was sitting next to my dad.
Yeah.
And I could see his face like, that's my boy, you know? Like, I was like, that's a way to get my dad to love me.
Then
I got laid off from a job like a month later, and my dad was kind of like, do anything. Just do anything, and you're closer to finding the thing you do like if you hate it, you know? And he was like, people said you were funny at the wedding. You should try an open mic. And I was like, oh. Maybe I'll try an open mic. And then I like looked into Giggles and I told my dad, I'm like, I'm going to Giggles. Do you want to come? And he's like, you have plenty of time to suck.
That's fucking
awesome. Which is
awesome.
A brilliant advice.
Yeah,
that's
fucking awesome.
Yeah. And so he didn't come for 3 months.
I didn't let anybody see me, my wife included, for 6 months. My wife saw me.
But it's so hard to get on stage without bringing friends too. I mean, now maybe easier, but yeah.
Well, no, I was just like basically doing.
And you were starting around the same time, probably too. So.
As what do you mean?
Like at comedy, didn't you have to bring friends to get up at open mic or?
So I was lucky that I was like I basically found places where I didn't have to. Yeah. But yeah, there were places like that. I didn't go to those places, but
I burned all my friendships in like 3 months.
Right. And I was friends with, when I started comedy, I was friends with Aaron Kirby.
Okay.
Who had already kind of trudged through that part of it.
And so he was like, let me tell you a pro tip.
Don't
stuff.
Put video up of yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, fucking don't invite all your friends to come see you. And so, yeah, my wife and I went to a wedding in Bellingham. I was like, well, this is far enough away from home. You want to go, like, there's an open mic here tonight.
Yeah.
We can go after the wedding. And I bombed super fucking hard. And then we had already had this planned. It was a Tacoma Comedy Club open mic, like the last one before the new year. And my mom came, my wife came, and then two friends of ours came. And I had the best set of my life.
Great.
Fucking, there's a lady named Jenny Zagrino, who was like, it was like a big deal. She was in town. She's been on Conan and shit. Maybe Comedy Central too. And, but it was like a big deal for like the lower level comics that she was in town. She came to the open mic and she was like, you had my favorite set of the night. And like, Jenny Zagrino has no idea who I am. I'll probably never meet her again, you know? But I was like, it was like a crazy, it was good luck and also like a very good contrast for my wife to see how bad it can be and how good it can be. Because if it had just been that one, she'd be like, why the fuck are you away from me so for many nights this, a week?
Yeah. There's a funny story. I think it's Andrew Slater, but he was opening for Gaffigan at a big theater or something like that, and he brought a girl, and she was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is what you do? Oh, this is incredible. And then like, the next show she comes to is like a headlining comedy club, and she's like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, it's still pretty cool, you know? And then the next show was like a bar gig, and she was like, and then she just never talked to him again or something like that, you know?
That's great.
And it's like, the reverse order. You got to see, but you see all sides of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, having the wherewithal, again, having my dad tell me, like, I mean, I got he would interview comics and be like, my son's just starting out. And they'd be like, it's going to be 10 years before you're good. And so Joe List was talking about this on a podcast recently, and I thought it was interesting because he was like, oh, I didn't know I could work harder because everyone told me, oh, it's going to take 10 years for you to get good. And so I just thought like, oh, I'll just keep going until I get good. And it's like, well, no, you have to, if you do more stuff, you can get good quickly, you know? And so it almost stunts your development to know this is going to take fucking forever. And so, but I had those ideas going in, like, it's going to take a while.
Right.
10,000 hours. I read all those books, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other, so I did a couple weddings this summer. My sister's wedding.
You performed at them?
I did. I was the officiant.
Oh, okay.
Which, but it was like, in both cases, they were like, we want you to do it because you're a comedian.
Okay.
Not because we think you're a man of the cloth. Like one couple, actually, I'm friends with the guy.
Can you absolve me of all my sins?
I'm an ordained minister. All right. Now. But
creeping in Aaron's territory.
Yeah. I actually did a podcast with him asking advice about it.
Oh, because, fun.
But so like one of them was my friend Matt Michaelis, who actually used to be the morning show. Well, he was briefly like a morning show host at KJR, but he was with Mitch Levy.
Oh.
He's Slick Hawk. Yeah. Did you ever heard that name before? So he's like, you know, like local radio guy. And him and his wife, their first date was they saw me at an open mic. And so they were like, it would be so cool if you would do our wedding.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, I'll be honest with you, I fucking crushed. I had, again, like you said, kind of so many people come up. But and then my sister's wedding, which I also did well. I had a moment, by the way, my now brother-in-law's brother, whatever that makes him to me. Apparently, he told my sister, he's like, I want to do my speech right before Casey. I don't want to go after him, which is so funny because he ended on such a fucking crushing line.
Yeah.
That I was like, fuck you, dude. Like, I have to follow that. I had to write a whole fucking ceremony.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you just got to just, like, end on the line of the fucking day, and I have to come up and do a speech after this?
Hard work. Welcome to being the headliner, buddy.
I know, fucking A.
You're like 9-inch metal penis.
They dropped checks fucking 9 minutes into my
in your wedding. That's funny.
It's also a tough thing about being a headliner is, and I don't know if we have any of this right now, but like having a bunch of, you're like, oh, fuck, that person did a joke about this. Like now I either have to reference their joke or not do my joke.
Oh, yeah. I don't run into that a lot.
Your premises are just so unique and original.
Well, I don't know. I just think, like, yeah.
I don't know. The time when I thought I could do stand-up is, so I had a girl when I was in Amber Lindstrom. I think she wanted to fuck me. By the way, I should take out the name, I guess. This is like 7th grade. I was in 7th grade. She was in 8th grade.
All right.
And
she's gonna track you down and be like, "Whatever happened to Casey McLean?"
Yeah, but she used to laugh at so many things I said, and she goes, "She said you should be a comedian." And then I worked at Taco Time in high school, and this guy, gay dude, also probably wanted to fuck me. He was actually the first out gay dude that I spent a lot of time with. Brandon Jacques was his name, like Jacques, but Jacques.
Okay.
He said that, and then that year I had to do a report for a history class, and you had to report on a founding father, and I did Sam Adams, and I did the whole thing just about the beer company.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything about the guy himself. I just talked about the beer company, and I was like, I know this is going to get a bad grade, but it's going to be so goddamn funny.
It's gonna be funny.
And it was so funny that the teacher gave me a good grade.
Oh, that's nice.
She was like, I know you fucked around, but I know you worked hard on it. That's so I'll funny. Give you a good grade. Yeah.
I wish I had teachers like that.
Miss Wolf.
I had I was in AP literature for one semester before I flunked out of it. But they were do a report on a song and then the meaning of the lyrics or whatever. And I was into Sublime at the time. So I was like, well, he's talking about his heroin addiction and how he can't. And
he's talking about how he smoked 2 joints in the morning, and then he also at night.
Yeah,
he smoked two more joints.
Ludacris is saying that there's a hoe in his way, and you need to get the hoes out of your way. Great Chris Rock joke. And so they would be like B minus, and I'd be like, I did the assignment. Don't be mad that you hate. And then I did an Eminem song one time, and they're like, I mean, I guess you did the thing, but this wasn't what we wanted.
When I was in college, I, by the way, didn't graduate, but I was in a business administration class, and we had to do a, profile a business and pick, if you were going to invest in a stock, this would be the company. And I did the company that would, they're called Craft Brewers Alliance. Huge. And I was like, craft beer's growing. And this is the biggest publicly traded company that's still craft beer. And then another guy talked about Tesla. But this is neither of these are big stocks
forever
at the time.
Ago.
And in both cases, the teacher was like, I didn't ask you to talk about your interests. I asked you to talk about a stock that had real potential. And you guys fucked around.
Suck a dick.
Yeah. Yeah. This piece of shit. And they're both like, I mean, Tesla's on.
He was
like,
I was going to invest, but then my third grade teacher told me not
to. Well, this is my fucking 15th grade teacher, my 13th grade teacher.
Yeah, college, yeah.
Yeah, what an asshole.
You're in third grade trading stocks.
Yeah. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about before, because I actually...
You wanted to get into comedy biz stuff, too, so...
I did, because you say a thing that I say, which is... You say lottery ticket.
Yeah.
It's a lottery ticket when you talk about
real life is the audition for the internet now, is my new phrase.
That's pretty good. So I always...
Because if I can get a joke to kill one time on video, and it maybe never really works the same again.
Right.
I recently brought back the dating a musician joke just because I thought, oh, now I have a good spot for it. But I wrote that in July when I was kind of seeing this musician chick.
Right.
And then I was like... Well, it's a fun joke and it's silly, but it didn't really work that great. And I put it out online, and I in the description, I go, some mediocre jokes that didn't make the cut. And all the comments were like, this is all that's amazing. Why are you talking about mediocre? And I'm like, I didn't know anyone even read the description, first of all.
It's also the thing about a joke like that is it has an audience.
Yeah.
And that's what's the thing that's frustrating is you may do a joke that crushes one night and then it struggles other nights, and you're like, well, if I could just get it to the people that like it.
Yeah.
And with the internet, you kind of can, right? So you had a Dry Bar special. You've had, in the pandemic, you released a special. You released another album/special since then. And I'm going to tell you a thing that I think is you'll know, but Chase Myers... He said he gives you a lot of shit about cutting up your Dry Bar special several times. You've released a lot of stuff where it's like, this is this bit in 45-second form. Here it is in three-minute form. Well, But again, this lottery ticket thing is interesting to me because... So I always... I think I might have talked to you about this before. Louis C.K., the aforementioned at the very beginning of the podcast, Louis C.K. I heard him on a Bennington Unmasked, and I don't think you can find it. Okay. Like, maybe you can now, but it used to be on. I figured out a way to get them downloaded as podcasts. I don't think you can do it anymore. So you might have to pay to Sirius or something like that. But he goes, being a comedian is like the odds of being a successful comedian are impossible.
Yeah.
The odds of being a successful comedian are like the odds of being a Olympic figure skater. And Olympic figure skaters, from the time they're 7 years old, they wake up every morning at 4 a.m. They skate from 4 to 7. They go to school. They get off work, or they get off school. They skate from 4 to 7 p.m.
Yeah.
For their entire lives until they're 18, and then they still probably won't get to be Olympic figure skaters. Mm-hmm. And comedians sit around and smoke pot all day. Mm-hmm. And if you can just treat comedy like an Olympic figure skater, and that's kind of the way that it's genius. Look at it is, yeah, which is do everything, like, so I have built-in limitations, right? Like, we were joking about this earlier, but I have, you know, I'm always too good looking for comedy, first off. But no, but I have like I have a wife, I have a kid.
Brag about it. Jeez.
Yeah, I have a wife and kid.
Oh, I can come with a woman.
But these are like constraints on comedy.
Yes.
And I have to work.
I got very lucky that I was unlovable.
I also am, and this is probably true of you too. I'm gonna live in the Seattle area my whole life. Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
So. Those are like constraints. Mm-hmm. I know those. Mm-hmm. I understand those. So now I know I can do, I know that it, like doing anything where it's like, get discovered in LA, it's not going to happen for me. Get discovered in New York, it's not going to happen for me. I will do everything that I can with the idea that I'm never going to leave Washington, and I'm probably going to, and I have probably never, I should have said probably on the Washington part, probably never going to leave Washington, never going to not be around my family. The probably was too late in that sentence.
That's not up to you at this point. That's between you and the judge. But.
The state will have a say. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have
these, I mean, at least not within a football field length, you know, whatever.
But yeah, that's like, I feel like there's a thing where it's like acknowledging these are the constraints. Right? Mm-hmm. Also, frankly, it's 2022 and I'm a white dude and nobody wants to, like, no outlet is trying to put out white dudes doing comedy right now.
Yeah, so I just did a Netflix audition this year. Mm-hmm. And, like, I flew in a couple days early and I stayed a day or two after because I was like, I want to watch every single show that I can and I want to see what I'm up against. Because I want to know if I feel like I belong. Because I, you know, I know how well I do every night. And I know that it's the road. And I know that it's killing in obscurity. And then New York City is a different thing. And I know all of that. And I know there's brilliant comedians I've never heard of.
Sure.
Just like they've never heard of me, you know. Because I'm a brilliant comedian in that category.
Yeah, I gathered
so,
that.
You know, I'm up there doing my best 5-ish, 7 or whatever it was. And then every other person is like, I'm a trans Jew from Kentucky and my parents are Republicans. And I'm like,
not just Ronan Hirschberg. Is that what
But it's like, there was nobody I knew on the show. There was like one guy I've seen before who was a white guy. And I talked to him later, Francis Ellis or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
From Barstool.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
on Barstool.
And so I like talked to him later. He came to Headline Laughs and I was hanging out with him and he was like, yeah, as soon as I got there, I was like, they're not looking for me. And I was like, yeah, that's what I realized too. Because I was watching all these people do, I mean, frankly, new comedy. Just not skilled as much as I am, I think.
Right.
And I'm with my manager who owns this comedy club and I'm like, did you pick these people out? And he's like, we got to submit and then they approve. And I'm like, okay. And I'm watching this going like, I mean, I didn't have what I would consider like a great set, but I had a pretty good set compared to what's, you know, the laughter, which is like, to me, it's a sport where you can measure. Like people are like, you can't. And I'm like, well, you kind of can. There's a laughter. There's a, you know, there's a, you can tell the structure of the joke if you're keen. And so, you know, walking away from that even, I was like, even if you do well in front of them, it just doesn't matter. They're not looking for the white guy.
Gabe Rutledge, past podcast guest, friend of both of ours. He always talks about, or always, Yeah, you hate him. There's a deep rivalry between you two.
Yeah.
He always says,
he stole my pizza joke when I was an open micer.
Is that true?
No. When I first met him at Laugh's open mic, I was doing like a pizza delivery joke because I used to deliver pizza, and he had one. And so he was like, oh, I heard that you do a pizza delivery joke or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I actually deliver pizza, so I didn't steal your joke. And he was like, oh, no. I wasn't. Very gabish to be like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. And I'm like, fuck you, buddy. I didn't steal your joke. And he's like, oh,
that's
shit.
That's so funny because he just had his birdwatching joke went viral on someone else's. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
I feel bad about that.
Listen to the Drive Home podcast. But he said a thing to me, which is you have to be able to make that noise. And that noise is the crowd laughing to a certain degree, right?
And if there's only like one rule in comedy, get them to laugh every 30 seconds or so.
And if you can't do that, you can't have the job. And I think that the thing that's frustrating is a lot of people, myself included, have been trying really hard to do that.
Yeah.
And you too.
Yeah.
And you do that and you still don't get the job, right? And there's a lot of people that can't do that that get the job.
Yeah. And that's why I like the sport analogy too. Like coming up for me too, I watched every Pete Carroll press conference. I still do. Just because I like the way he talks and the way, and Russell Wilson, as corny as that dude is, like he had like a mental health coach during the season, and he would talk about like, don't let things get too high, don't let things get too low. And like Richard Sherman, all those guys, like they're competing at the top of their professional sport. Yeah. And what a mind fuck to have 70,000 people cheering you on and millions watching, and you make the play that saves the whole thing. And everyone's like, you're a genius. And then they're like, how are you? And it's, I'm the best in the world. Fuck you. And they're like, how dare you? Yeah, and it's like, and I like, think about the mind fuck that those guys go through. And so I try to treat it like that, where like, even now I almost replicate, like, to me, every week is like a football game where it's like, I know the weekend I got my shows. So what am I doing during the, because I don't have a day job or anybody that loves me. So I am able to say.
Specifically people that don't love you. They make it really obvious.
Do not like me. But so you go like, you know, Wednesday I got my open mic that I can go to and try stuff out. So then it's like Monday, Tuesday, sit down and write, you know, find that actual time to sit down and write every week.
Would you say, if you were going to put it into words, would you say that the separation is in the preparation?
Yes. But I know people that succeed really well by just going up there. And I can't do that.
Every
word has to be in the exact same spot.
I get what you're saying. I will say, like, when I started, and I'm sorry if you saw me early on, but when I started, I was like very rehearsed and very much.
You should apologize now.
I was very much like, this is the way the words are. I got to get good at saying them in this order. And then what I've broken myself of that because I know I have that. Mm-hmm. So I was also, I was trying to be a radio broadcaster, sports journalism. I have this subconscious idea that the recipe for a comedian is an overbearing mother, withholding father. That's what they say. My dad and I like did not get along at points. And I think that I was like subconsciously like, I want to be on sports radio so my dad will listen to me. You know what I'm saying? Because he listened to sports radio.
Yeah.
But I was like, I wrote a sports blog.
He'll pay attention to me now.
Yeah, he has to. He'll change
drink
the
piss there.
Yeah, I know.
Homebrew.
These are callbacks to shit.
And I was like, oh, what a good idea for my joke. And then I'm like, oh, it's Casey's joke.
I was like very, and like wording was very important to me. And what I've tried to do is actually break myself of that. I used to write every joke word for word.
Yeah.
And then I would try to say it that way. Mm-hmm. I just try to get good at saying it that way. And now I'm like, I can't. What I know is I have jokes that I still tell that they come out exactly the same every time because that's how I told them at the beginning, and there's a lot of repetition. Mm-hmm. And they're like just fucking autopilot at this point. And I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I like, because like tonight, I'll listen to it, but I had like some lines that I said that I've never said that shit before in my life. You know what I mean? Which is, to me, I hate the idea of writing on stage. I hate when people say I write on stage. Yeah. But what I do like is being loose enough to follow an idea down the path, right?
That you have in that moment. You have to be confident enough to recover from that when and if, you know, whatever. It doesn't.
Sometimes great lines are born from fucking
Absolutely.
Up. Yeah.
I did a thing about like, it was kind of a fake mess up when I recorded it on video, but like I was saying, like I was dating a musician, and I one time I was like dating a magician, and then I was like, that could be funny to just fuck that up on purpose.
Yeah.
And get a laugh. And so, I don't do it for the actual bit anymore, but I don't know. All I know how to do is comedy the way I do it too. Right. And so,
but you do a thing though, which is you put out a lot of content. Yeah. And I think the thing about that is, and that's where we talked about the lottery tickets.
Yes.
Is
we're getting back to the actual point of the conversation.
I think of that as like, because this is why, and we talked about this by the way. We took a ride from the Oklahoma, the Will Rogers Airport, and I
named after a guy that died in a plane crash, right?
Is that right?
Isn't he? I think so.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a rough name for the only musicians that I know are like Selena. No, she got murdered.
Yeah, John Denver, I think, was a plane crash too.
Richie Valens and the Big Bopper.
Those, is that about my penis?
Yeah.
The car ride, the guy was, we were about t-shirts,
dude,
and
it was like the most inside comedy talk. Graham, shout out to Graham, who's
here, remember your song,
sound guy / assistant general manager at Bricktown Comedy Club, the man, the only guy who's ever gotten, I ask for he remembered my song. He had a log of the songs, and not only so it's Outkast, the song that I've always wanted to be played when I come out for comedy is Outkast, Ain't No Thing, starting at 25 seconds. It's when the beat kicks in on the song. And nobody's ever gotten it right. They'll either start it at the beginning, which is an insane, if you're listening at home, it's an insane part to start the song on. Starts with the N-word.
Yeah.
Says it several more times, and then there's like a gunshot.
There's like a skit.
There's a 25-second skit. He did that, but also listen to us talk about that. So, I want to put out like 20 minutes a year because then it's like, if you wait 3 years, I'll have crowd work moments and I'll have like, you know, one-off jokes and shit like that, that are like current event stuff. And that's cool. But like, I can kind of like re-enter the people's minds every year is my idea. And that's, again, it's like, I don't know if that's right or if it's right to wait and do an hour every 3 years. What I think is doing 20 minutes a year is sustainable for me. And also, I'm so fucking bored of my materials after a while, you know?
Here's a lot of the things I think about is that even putting it out, like I did a pandemic special, right? Where it was recorded at Bricktown, is like 30 minutes of COVID jokes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like a bunch of those jokes ended up making the album or whatever.
Sure.
And so like, even though that got 150,000 on YouTube, that's nothing. It's minuscule, and it only got me, you know, a couple hundred extra subscribers from that or whatever it is. And so, like, but no one, like, we get this idea that, like, even Gabe was talking about this, where he's like, every time I tell the bird joke, I'm like, someone saw this already. And it's like, people have seen you before and seen you tell the jokes and they still laugh because they kind of forget where it's going or whatever. And so until it's like a completed project, you can shelve the material, you can do whatever, but like, you know, put a thing out.
Yeah.
And then once you're done with it, you build the new stuff and then people can go back and discuss. Gabe, he's even talking about that where he's like, some of my jokes, I wish they had a more popular delivery system. Yeah. And you're like, well, you know, it wasn't a big thing to film your show or whatever back then. It was audio. But now, even like I talked to my record label and they're like, oh yeah, video is going to be the way to go. Like, because Sirius is kicking comics off now.
Right.
Spotify has kicked every comedian I know off. And Pandora is going to start kicking people off
now. Which I don't even get.
And so it doesn't make any sense.
But why would you kick a popular thing off? I just don't know.
They're bad at their job. This is also the biggest thing to help me with my mental health is like when I'm checking into hotels or whatever, I'm like, some people are bad at their job. And that's just something we have to accept, you know.
The thing about it too is like the comedy.
Yeah.
You're the writer.
Yeah.
You're the producer. Mm-hmm. It's the least complicated revenue structure.
We just wanted more than 0.03 cents a stream.
Right.
And they were like, oh, well, in that case, we'll just take you off and you get nothing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, all right, fine.
This is why comedians are too stupid to unionize.
And it's so dumb. And it's, so it doesn't make any sense. So now it's like Colbert doesn't have comedians on. All the late shows are going away. They're not even that popular anymore.
It's not speakeasy shit again, dude.
It doesn't really matter. So, you know, I spent maybe 10 grand on a special. It looks like shit. The guy fucked it up because I just took the first guy that was like, it's always been my dream to film a comedy special. And I was like, you're hired.
Right.
What's the price? I can afford that, I think, you know. And luckily we made, you know, we sold a big theater out. So we made the money to pay for him that night, you know. Right. But, you know, my brother directs and commercials and stuff professionally, and he was like, oh, yeah, I would have charged you like 100 grand. And I'm like, you're my brother and you would charge me 100 grand? Like, fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but now it's like, that's even with all that, it still got millions of views, and there were still 45 people on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And I ran an ad.
Yeah.
And I have millions of views on Facebook. I have the Dry Bar special, which went viral in 2018.
I think,
how do you capture this audience anymore?
So when I started comedy,
that's got to be more than just a spot on Jimmy Kimmel, you know? So, like, the future's in your own hands, you know? The internet changes everything. I'm a big Gary Vee fan. I know a lot of people think he's corny and tacky, but, like, you know, I call him like kind of Jim Cramer for apps, where he'll be like, Facebook's hot right now. Get on Facebook. And then you're like, oh, okay. And like, I was following Todd Royce and he was blowing up on YouTube. And I was like, what the fuck? And he's like, YouTube Shorts. And I'm like, oh. And then I started posting on YouTube Shorts. I was like one of the first people after Todd. And so that's how my thing kind of blew up, you know? And so it's like, if you can get on these apps and you can just, but Gary Vee is much more like, just take ownership of it and just fucking like, it's a long process, but there's like a hustle, you know, he's a little hustle porny too, where you're like, yeah, I'm a hustler, you know, but like there's actual real value, you know, like the thing that changed my career too is he was on a podcast and he was like, if Facebook ads can convince people to vote for Trump, surely you can convince them to buy music tickets.
Fuck.
And I was like, fuck.
That's great.
And then I started just renting little theaters because in 2018, I was going to be on an NBC stand-up show. And I was like, my Dry Bar thing went viral. I got management. He runs a big comedy club in New York. And they got me on an NBC stand-up show. And I was like, this is it.
It's happening.
I had a break. It worked out. I'm 8-9 years into comedy. I'm going to hit my 10 years. I'm good. I'm, you know, whatever.
I remember this for you.
And then I canceled my first Funny Bone headline weekend.
Oh.
Because this was a competition show, and they were like, it could be 1 week. It could be 4 weeks. And I was like, let me clear my whole month just because I want to cancel in advance. I don't want to cancel with 1 week notice because that'd be rude. And so
this is where we got to be less polite.
And I had already canceled on him once to do NACA, which you can get $30,000 worth of gigs. And I got one college gig out of it. So I broke even flying to Pennsylvania, you know.
Yeah.
And so and then he had canceled on me once because he had me doing the grand opening of a club. And then the grand opening got pushed back. So we'd canceled on each other a couple times. And then I canceled again going like, I'm going to be a big star. I'm going to be on the show. But don't worry, I'll come back. And then I didn't get on the show. Like, I, like, was driving down to L.A., and I stayed with Chad Denick in San Francisco at the time. And so I was driving, and I was getting there a day in advance.
And so I was calling the day before I was supposed to be in LA, and I was like, hey, I haven't heard anything for a couple days, but I'm on my way down. I got a place that Titus was going to let me stay at his house, and he was going to like coach me up mentally.
Oh, man.
I was all ready. And then just like, just voicemail, hey, I'm on my way down. Just let me know where I should be tomorrow. 10 minutes later, my manager is calling, and I'm like,
can't be good.
That's not good.
God damn.
And then they're just, and even they are like, we don't even know what happened, but we think the show's on pause or something like that. And I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And they're like, we're trying to figure it out, but I guess just head home for now and we'll try to figure it out. And I was like, okay. And then my Corey is friends with Erica Rhodes, who was on the show. And so he was texting her the whole time, like, hey, my buddy's going to be on the show. You guys would like each other. You'll be friends. And so then I was like, hey, can you check with your friend? And he's like, yeah, she said the show's filming and she was wondering where you are. And I'm like, well, fucking guess I'm not on the show. Never got an explanation.
So
never
brutal.
Got a phone call. Never got an apology. The guy unfollowed me from Instagram, all the stuff, you know.
Oh,
the
man.
Producer who was like, I was sending bits to a producer back and forth, like, which jokes do you want me to do? I think this joke. And he's like, let's not do the stripper joke. It's going to be like a family show. And
man.
I'm like, cool, cool, cool. And he's like, you're going to do great. And then nothing. 4 years later, Netflix audition. Guess who's the guy in charge of the Netflix audition?
Jesus.
The guy who booked me for Bring the Funny on NBC. And never heard from him ever again. But I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh. And then he comes up to me and he goes, hey, man, I feel so bad for what happened and how they... I was trying to tell the producers, but they just didn't get you, really. And I was kind of like, okay, you know, that's not the best explanation I ever want. And I also did an audition for The Tonight Show, he was one of the guys that was executive producing this show, the booker for The Tonight Show. And I killed that audition. I was standing next to my manager, like my dad, like proud. Like he was like, that's my client, you know.
That's
and I was
boy.
Like, come on, Maria. And so all these people were like talking. And so I sat down and had a beer with the booker of The Tonight Show after the audition. And he was like, great, mate. Hopefully we get you on in a year or so. And I was like, cool, cool. And this is like early 2020. And so I'm like, this is my year, you know. But he was like, oh, yeah, bring. And I was still mad at him for Bring the Funny. And then he goes, I quit the show 2 days in because they're a bunch of idiots. I lost out on a $30,000 bonus. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, you're not the guy to blame then.
Maybe.
Maybe. But then I'm like, so now I'm like, this guy's like, hey, man, I feel so bad. And I'm like, not bad enough to ever call me.
Right.
And now 4 years later, and then he said thing that I'm like, I don't know if it's I'm over reading into it, but it was very like, yeah, when Chris said, have you on this showcase, I was like, oh, of course. Like, yeah, we owe it to him, kind of. And I was like, oh. So this was just very like, oh, yeah, we feel bad. Let's throw him on this thing. And we're not really looking at him, you know? And then it turns out everyone's like a gay Jew from Kentucky, you know? And so you're like,
everybody's a gay Jew.
Everybody's a gay Jew from Kentucky. So all of those experiences informed my now thing to, because after that happened, I was in a rut. I just went through this breakup with that chick from Spokane. And so I was like, I'm going to get on TV. I'm going to show her.
Biden got elected.
Fuck her.
The whole thing
and
fell apart.
And then nothing happened. And so then I'm like, I just started renting little theaters, doing my Eagles cover band tour. Because I was like, if I go to cities that don't have a comedy club, then they don't have a choice. You know, they're not going to be like, well, we want to see a famous comedian. I am a famous. It says 7 million views under the video. They don't know the difference. And no, that made me realize like, oh, the internet is changing everything. And that, and you know, and then COVID hit and it was like, fuck. But that really made me, again, I tried to think like, what can I really do?
Well, and there was a big benefit in being a person who was willing to go out earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, by the way, like, I mean, I went out earlier than a lot of people.
Yeah.
But, again, this fucking family.
Yeah,
life.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I, like, wife. You know, like, you know, there's like, there are people who, like, you're a good example of someone who just never stopped really going out. Gabe never stopped going out.
I mean, it was very sporadic. It was like you book 3 weeks in a row and then you have nothing for a month and a half.
Right.
And so, but I really wanted to focus on like writing because I was like, that's all I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And like we talked about too, is like not being afraid to bomb and do new jokes because every joke was new. Mm-hmm. Because it was also like, I'm writing all this COVID stuff, which I think is really funny. And also, I don't know when the next show I'll get is. Mm-hmm. So I want to get this on video before it expires.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I filmed this 30 minutes in Bricktown. I'm bombing, basically, because I'm doing COVID jokes in a city that doesn't believe in it.
Yes, where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, all the comments on the YouTube video are like, this crowd fucking sucks. You're a genius. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't even realize I wasn't doing that well because I was just like, when I played it back, I was laughing so hard at my own jokes because I had only told them three times. Yeah. Even. But again, it was like, you know, now I'm like, I got all this free money from the government too, and I really built the habits I think that now are going to make me so much more successful.
That's good. Yeah, I think that's I admire.
And we learned also in the you know, the internet, we were doing Zoom gigs and we were doing all sorts of weird shit. And then it's like,
did you do any backyard and outdoor shows?
We did one. Was that the farm we did? Was that a farm we did in somewhere down there? It was like a garage or a barn
that's
gig.
Right, in Puyallup. Yeah. Those were fucking...
They were all right.
They were great. Yeah. I wish the people would still do it.
It was great.
More often. Yeah. God, that's right. That was... And that was because that was a show where Josh Firestein, past podcast guest, he was like,
you
featured
before me,
huh?
Asking,
did I? Yeah, I did. I was trying to think of it. I think I've only had him on once. He was like, you feature. I don't want to feature, which is like the nicest thing because first off, I don't even think we were selling merch, but it's like, dude, I'm like doing one show a month, like outdoor shows and shit. It's so, like, I've talked to Gabe about this a lot because Gabe was trying to prep for his dry bar special, and he was like, I want to do whatever backyard you have, I'll do it. And I go, hey, man, I don't care about getting paid. Can I just open for you on as many of these as people will let me open? And literally, I would do it. I'd do, like, 20 or 30 minutes before him.
Mm-hmm.
Every single place ended up paying me too. Like I probably made an average of like $150.
And they're
a show.
So thankful to just have comedy and something to do. And
yeah, like, we did so many where like it was like we did. There was a fucking the wildfires going on.
Yeah,
there was a burn ban.
Yeah,
COVID, and a guy is smoking meat on his porch with a burn ban with smoke already in the air. We're eating fucking brisket and doing like this show that I'm like, what I learned is that I truly love comedy. Mm-hmm. What I think a lot of people learned is that they don't.
Yeah.
And I think they should quit.
And stay out of the way.
Exactly.
If you're not helping, you're hurting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so those are a lot of the things that, now when we talk about the future and the internet and all this stuff, and it's like, I toured with Hofstetter who, he's had a late show with Craig Ferguson appearance.
Sure.
But, like, other than that, I mean, he's had some, like, MLB Network stuff or whatever. But anything he's gotten is because of YouTube.
Right.
And, like, posting heckler clips.
Yeah.
And so, like, being on tour with this guy and, like, doing a 400-seat theater on a Tuesday night and then one on a Wednesday and one on a Thursday and then, you know, like every six nights a week, seven if he wants, but he tries to take a night off for a digital show because he still thinks that's important. And so like literally the hardest working guy. And then you're like, oh, this internet shit is all that matters. Because the industry hates him. Comics hated him. They're starting to turn now because everyone's doing crowd work. And I saw a tweet the other day that was like, everyone who's posting crowd work clips owes Steve Hofstetter an apology.
And I saw him tweet something like that too. That was
he retweeted it, I think maybe, or he replied to it because I sent it to him.
Yeah, I saw him.
I didn't expect that.
That's funny. I saw him say something like there was a lot of comics who were making fun of me several years ago.
Yeah. He posted a big thing too. Yeah. That was after that tweet. And what's funny is
I take credit for it. But like, I posted this big thing about like touring with him, and like, everyone thinks the crowds are gonna heckle more, but they're way better.
Yeah.
And then I saw that tweet, and then he made a post about it, and so, yeah, man. I mean, think of the technological advances we've had in 10 years. Where like, when I started open mic, I was using tapes, like literal mini DV tapes, and now we get a card this big, and it records 4 hours of video of 4K. HD, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what, you know, it's almost like there's this like information pipeline, and it used to be you have a CNN, you have ABC, you know, you have all these little spigots, but now you can just go, you know, fuck, I'll just tap into this myself and hope to get some runoff, you know.
Right. And
now,
you know,
there's
need
a lot of luck, and you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Thing.
Right.
That's the lottery ticket.
But it is like
everything.
It
you
is
do.
Just pulling that thing and go. Every joke is a little token, and you go, "What do I get now? 50,000 yeah. views." But it also seems fake, because like, no one ever compliments me on TikTok. Like, no one ever at a show is like, "I follow your TikTok."
Right. You did have a lady today, I will say, that followed you on Instagram.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was nice. See, and again, it doesn't feel real to me because I'm like 13,000, whatever. And I know people that would love to have 13,000.
Me.
And like, you know, to me, I'm like, it doesn't matter what I post in my story. It gets 400 views. It doesn't like if I post about my dad's cancer, it gets a 1,200 views or whatever, because somehow Instagram knows that I'm talking about cancer. It's very weird how this technology works, man. It's very spooky.
It is spooky.
But at the same time, you're just like, the other thing too is the fear of looking tacky to your peers.
Yeah.
You have to get over too, because you see, like, when I see Steve post something and it gets a ton of engagement and I roll my eyes and I'm like, all right, come on, buddy. But
how many more tickets does he sell?
I mean, you know. So it just feels like whatever is going to happen with the next pandemic, the next fire, the next whatever, where we're going to be doing virtual reality shows probably in whatever Meta is trying to set up. You know, like, all I know is, yeah, these companies are evil, but they run the world. And
I live in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make money too. So we're a capitalistic society. Everyone hates capitalism until it works for them. And, you know, I'm trying to be much more than just, you know, a $1,500 headliner weekend, you know, that no one sells tickets to.
Too real.
Yeah.
All right, man.